you know, in Georgia, we have a lot of trout water and a lot of native trout streams and a lot of trout that exists wild, but we need to supplement that population in order for people to want to come to Georgia and go trout fishing. The trout water in Georgia is very pure, clean, and has a very low fertility and very low hardness, which is what sets up the food chain for the trout. If we didn't put these trout out in Georgia, they wouldn't grow very large. They would never reach 10 inches in Georgia without our program.
Fish are a magical species. There always seems to be a pattern in the way they swim. All is tranquil until they breach the surface angling for their next meal. But the real wonder is in what it takes to run an efficient and healthy hatchery like the one we're visiting today.
I came from the mud, there's dirt on my hands. Strong like a tree, there's roots where I stand.
I'm David Zelsky, and this is the Fork in the Road podcast, presented by Georgia Grown and the fine folks at Georgia Public Broadcasting. Each episode, we feature stories from Georgia's farmers, fishermen, merchants, artisans, chefs, and others who help provide Georgia-grown products to folks in the Peach State and beyond. Today, we are in Raven County, known as the farm-to-table capital of Georgia and home to a group of thriving mountain communities. Here on the banks of Lake Burton, we'll find one of many Georgia hatcheries where clear mountain water supports a healthy population of fish for our rivers, lakes, and streams. To learn more, I talked to John Lee Thompson, trout stocking coordinator for the state of Georgia.
Right. We're here at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery in Raven County, Georgia. The hatchery was built in the 1940s and has just recently been renovated in the last couple years. This facility usually contributes about 350,000 10-inch fish to our Georgia trout stocking program, and that's a 1 million fish program all across North Georgia. There's four trout hatcheries that participate in the program, and three of them are run by the Georgia Department of Natural Resources, and one of them is run by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. My job is actually to get all four facilities functioning as one unit, stocking a million fish in Georgia.
As one of the four locations, why is Raven County a good spot for this to take
place? Oh, it's a great spot. Raven County, this where we stand right here is one, I've been told, the second wettest spot on the East Coast, so it's a perfect spot to have a stream-fed trout hatchery. Another unique spot about this location is that our watershed is almost completely surrounded by U.S. Forest Service land, so it's very protected. There's no development, no disturbance of the soils above this hatchery, so that really makes this a really nice place for a facility.
Fun fact, the largemouth bass is the official state fish of Georgia, but you won't find any of them at this facility. Nope, this place is all about trout.
So here at Lake Burton today, we have rainbow, brown, and brook trout. Typically, we're about a 90% rainbow trout program with a little bit of brown trout and very few brook trout. Brook trout are native, but they're also the most difficult to culture in our hatcheries. They're the most susceptible to problems associated with heat and disease in our facilities.
We'll talk more about that shortly. But first off, what exactly is a fish hatchery and what does it do? Well, the purpose is simple, to raise fish in a controlled environment and use them to replenish fish populations in the surrounding area.
You know, in Georgia, we have a lot of trout water and a lot of native trout streams and a lot of trout that exists wild, but we need to supplement that population in order for people to want to come to Georgia and go trout fishing. The trout water in Georgia is very pure, clean, and has a very low fertility and very low hardness, which is what sets up the food chain for the trout. If we didn't put these trout out in Georgia, they wouldn't grow very large. They would never reach 10 inches in Georgia without our program.
Hatcheries use applied science to breed the biggest possible fish to help balance the ecosystem and attract anglers to bodies of water they support.
These fish are all destined for somebody's dinner plate. Anywhere where these fish are stocked, DNR is managing those waters as a put and take fishery. We're putting them out for you to take them home. And we expect folk anglers to take them home and certainly put them on their dinner plate and eat them.
But I guess there are always limits as to what you can do.
That's right, there's limits on the amount of fish you can catch. You know, eight per person per day, and certainly here, you know, the limiting factor is rainfall. The renovation project that was just completed here, the goal was to eliminate poor production years here associated with low rainfall and drought. So there are some limits, but we found ways to work around them.
Anglers in search of large, high-quality trout need to look no further than the well-stocked waters of Lake Burton.
Right, so Lake Burton is one of the few large reservoirs that we stock here in Georgia with trout. We only put brown trout in Lake Burton, and the idea there is that we're putting the brown trout in to control a non-native bait fish that's been released in Lake Burton. It's called the blueback heron, and we take advantage of that forage base to grow some really nice trophy browns. There is a proposal to stock Lake Blue Ridge, and you just have to stay tuned on that one.
Very good, very good. Do the bass and the brown trout get along?
Well, the byproduct of stocking brown trout in Lake Burton is you get some really nice bass too. Sometimes some of the smaller trout that are stocked in Lake Burton are just a perfect meal for a largemouth.
The circle of life. To serve the goal of creating the meatiest, healthiest trout that science will allow, hatchery fish get a constant supply of specially formulated nutritional food.
Fish food is one of our number one expenses here. In the hatcheries, they eat special fish food that's made for trout, but in the wild, they'll eat bugs and macroinvertebrates. That's the lack of those bugs and macroinvertebrates in our wild trout streams is why we have this program. But here in the hatchery, they eat a special fish food made for trout, the primary ingredients fish meal, and you certainly can overfeed them. And like I said, it's our number one expense here. We try to feed them about 1-2% of their body weight. So we're constantly calculating the weight of our fish so we know how much to feed them. Certainly something that we take very seriously here on the hatchery.
But even with all their food needs taken care of, the life of a hatchery fish isn't always easy.
What are some things you have to worry about when it comes to predators? I have seen some birds of prey up here, predators, but also disease. What do you have to worry about here?
Right, so most of our problems at this facility occur in the summer when water temperatures get above 65 degrees. You know, the trout would normally do fine in the wild at those temperatures, but here at the hatchery, at those high densities, not only do the trout grow faster, but so do parasites and disease. So we monitor that during the summer. We track mortality daily here. And if we see that mortality curve begin to increase, we start taking a look at the fish. We can scrape them and look at their skin under the microscope for parasites. We can also look for bacterial infections. That's certainly something that we have to keep in mind. This is a food product, and if we have to treat these fish with any antibiotic, they can't be stocked, they cannot be consumed for 21 days after that. So we have a withdrawal period if we have to utilize some of those methods.
From protecting these fish from hungry flying predators to making sure their diet is just right, fish culture requires a huge amount of time and care.
Okay, and there's a lot more to it than people may think. They see these ponds, the fish are all in there, you know, then put them in the lake. But there's a whole process.
Oh, there certainly
from
is.
There certainly is.
We'll look at some eggs today. We're going to see the next stage, which is fry, fingerlings, and then we have what we call our catchable trout. And so eggs are typically about the size of a pencil eraser. The fry go up to about 2 inches, and from 2 to 6 inches, those are what we call fingerlings. Anything above 6 inches and above, we're catchable trout here in Georgia.
There are many species and subspecies of trout, some more rare than others. At Lake Burton Hatchery, they focus on three kinds, rainbow, brown, and brook trout. Now, do you know the differences between each of them?
These are rainbow trout from the federal hatchery, and let's see if we can take a look at one.
Look at that.
Look at that. You can see they have a very distinct pink stripe down the lateral line of the fish. And that's typical. That's a defining characteristic for rainbow trout. These are brown trout. These brown trout were hatched here last Christmas and are the same cohort as the eggs in the trays. So let's see if we can get a couple to look at. Now the brown trout's characteristics are a little bit different than the brook and the rainbow. The brown trout have a large black dot on their back, no pink lateral line like a rainbow, and sometimes you can see an orange dots with halos on their abdomens. These two tanks here at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery have a fish that's not typically cultured here. It's brook trout. We would like to grow brook trout here, but they're the most susceptible when conditions are not right. So we'd like to try a few, but we don't like to base our whole production on them because they're the first ones to get sick. But brook trout are the only ones that are native to Georgia, and they can be clearly identified by the white leading edge on their fins. They also don't have any black spots on their back. They have a yellow mappy pattern. These are real typical signs of or identifying characteristics of brook trout. Brook trout are the only trout that are actually native to Georgia, and so they're a little bit different. They're really hard to catch.
Rainbow trout have a pink line down their sides. Brown trout have large black dots on their back and sometimes orange dots with halos on their abdomens. And brook trout have a white leading edge on their fins. So now you know. And knowing is half the battle. Now, the day I visited Lake Burton was actually a great time to see these fish in all different stages of life.
This is a rare time of year that we have all three, four stages of trout on the fish hatchery. We've got eggs in the trays. When they hatch, at first they're considered sac fry while they still have a yolk sac, but these are considered swim up fry or just fry now that they're swimming and actively feeding. When they get to reach the size of about 2 inches, we start calling them fingerlings. And then from 2 to 6 or 7 inches, they're considered fingerlings. And then anything larger than that, we pretty well call a catchable trout.
And so let's start at the very beginning.
So here is our egg incubation room. When we, the last week of October or first week in November, we travel to a trout hatchery in South Carolina, Wahala, South Carolina. We're partners with that hatchery and we help them spawn their brown trout. Each female brown trout will produce 2,000 to 4,000 eggs, and we help them spawn theirs. They put up 600,000 eggs, and then we try to get 300,000 eggs to bring home. This year, we had a very good production year, and we brought home 450,000 brown trout eggs. They're in these heat stray stacks, and we'll see if we can pull one out, and you can take a look at them.
Wow.
The white eggs are non-viable, and they are not going to make trout. You want the eggs to be translucent. So here we are. In mid-November, we'll start taking a look at these eggs, and we're looking for them to have reached the next stage, which is eyed up. When the fish eggs are eyed up, you can literally pull them out, take a look at them, and see the fish's eyes as a dark black spot. I don't see any eyes in these eggs yet, so they're not quite ready. But when they do reach that stage of eyed up, they'll go into the next stage of trout culture, which is a McDonald jar, and that's where they actually hatch.
But first,
they've reached that stage of eyed up, and before we put them in the McDonald jars where they actually hatch, we do one more thing to them. We shock them, and that's a process that goes through. It tries to break a membrane in the eggs that haven't been fertilized and aren't going to be viable. So we'll literally take the eggs and pour them from one tub to the next. So we'll get out a tray, we'll pour them in the tub with water, of course. Everything we do and everything in the trout hatchery always has water and it's always moving. But we'll pour the eggs from one jar to the other at about chest height, and we'll do that 3 times in order to break a membrane in the eggs that haven't been fertilized. You may have seen some white eggs in the trays. Well, what we hope after we shock them is that any eggs that are not eyed up will turn white, and they will be separated out through a process we call picking. We'll put the eggs through a machine, and it'll sort white eggs that are non-fertile, and then it'll sort the translucent eggs that are eyed up and fertile into 2 different groups. So we only put fertilized eggs into the McDonald jars.
McDonald type hatching jars are specialized incubation containers used for hatching fish eggs. They're the industry standard for fish hatcheries. The McDonald jars automatically roll and rotate fish eggs to provide them with enough oxygen to develop into healthy fish. We call them McFish.
All right, take two.
All right, so after the eggs have stayed in the heath trays for about a month and they've reached that stage of eyed up, we've shocked them, we've picked them, separated out the non-viable eggs, we take our viable eggs and they go into these McDonald jars. We're about a month away from that process. It typically happens at Thanksgiving. They'll end up, and you'll have about 100,000 eyed eggs rolling around in this jar. It looks a lot like a lava lamp, if you've ever seen one of those for our older viewers, and water's continually flowing through the jar. As the eggs begin to hatch, some of them swim out on their own, and they swim out and they make it out into the trough on their own. But most of them need our help. So we'll take the eggs and fry that are in this jar, and we'll pour them a few at a time into this sifter. This sifter allows fry to pass through and end up in the trough that we're sifting in, and the eggs that haven't hatched stay behind. We pour them back into the jar, give them another 12 hours or so, and do it again.
And finally, after a process which takes up to 2 months, it's hatching time.
They don't all typically hatch at once. Depending on water temperature, the hatch can last for about 3 days. After they've hatched, they're considered sac fry. They have a yolk sac on them, and that's all the food they need for about a month. But once that yolk sac has been consumed and they start swimming up, that's when we begin to try to feed train them. We have some rainbow trout that were hatched about a month here ago that have just started feeding. They're swimming up and they're in these troughs. I'll grab a little bit of food and we'll see if they're hungry. Just like the fish outside, they get a real high protein and fat content fish food. We have to train them to eat this. They're a little bit slow when they first start out, but they'll learn. And they actually get the fat and protein contents actually a little bit higher than the fish food that we use outside. But they have fish feed that's about the consistency of powdered sugar, where the fish food that we were feeding outside is almost the small size of small marbles. And they've only been feeding for about a week or so, so they're still figuring it out. Some of them never figure it out, they just die.
Survival of the fittest.
Survival of the fittest, that's right.
If there's one thing fish really need to survive, it's water. Hopefully that isn't news to you. Fish hatcheries have complex and impressive systems for making sure fish get the freshest water possible.
Here at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery, we're a stream-fed hatchery. There's a dam across the road in Moccasin Creek. And at that dam, water's diverted out of the creek and into these two large concrete vaults behind us. Those vaults are where the water is collected and then redistributed throughout the hatchery. So the water is fed to those vaults through gravity, and then the head pressure of the water level in those vaults is what drives the water through the rest of the hatchery. We typically use about 5,000 gallons a minute, and right now we're taking all of the water out of Moccasin Creek, and we're operating at about 3,000 gallons per minute. This is the diversion dam for Lake Burton Fish Hatchery. At this structure here is where we're diverting Moccasin Creek out of its stream bed and into the hatchery for trout culture. This is actually phase one of the renovation project. We did not want to rebuild the fish hatchery below an 80-year-old dam, so the first part of our project was to rebuild the dam. The original dam was located downstream about 75 feet from here, right where that piece of bedrock juts out. We started here, we rebuilt this dam, and now this new structure supplies all the water to the large concrete vaults in the front of the hatchery, and from there the water's portioned out to different trout production places.
Lake Burton Fish Hatchery recently underwent some renovations that brought them into the 21st century. It had been over 40 years since the last renovation.
The hatchery was renovated one time before in 1978. This picture is before that renovation, probably from the 50s. The last renovation in 78 was driven by the passage of the Clean Water Act. We then had to start capturing all of our trout waste. If you have 400,000 fish on the hatchery, you have 400,000 fish using the bathroom at the hatchery, and all of that prior to this one was going into Lake Burton. Now we capture it, use these last three ponds as our wastewater treatment system, and assimilate that waste before that water's released into Burton.
The recent renovations left the hatchery with some very useful new technology.
This whole building and these eight circular tanks are all brand new to Lake Burton Fish Hatchery. They were, when we did the renovation here, the goal of the renovation was to eliminate poor production years associated with drought. These round tanks only use about 150 gallons a minute, where a linear raceway outside is using 600 to 800 gallons a minute. That allows us to keep fish in here when the creek is dry. The clean water from the top of these tanks is going to the raceways below it. It's a dual drain circular, and the dirty water from these tanks is going through the clarifier. Yeah, that's the clarifier.
And tell me what this clarifier is doing.
Okay, this clarifier is collecting all the fecal material from this fish in that circular tank. This is a dual drain circular, and all the fish fecal material and only about 15% of the water is passing through a drain in the center of the tank. It comes over to the clarifier and settles in this clarifier. The clean water is captured off the surface and goes to the tank below. When we want to come in here and clean these clarifiers, we just pull the center standpipe, and as the water level in this drops, it'll pick up all the fecal material and send it to the wastewater treatment ponds out at the end of the property.
And this is what the original hatchery did not have.
That is, the original hatchery did not have it. We had it prior to this last renovation, but not nearly as efficient as this. We're utilizing very little water to clean a lot of water. We're using very little water to clean that water.
A toxic fire, a plume of smoke, and a community demanding answers. In Conyers, Georgia, the biolab disaster left residents searching for truth and accountability. This season, GPB uncovers system failures, hears from whistleblowers, and follows neighbors still fighting to be heard. I'm Pamela Kirkland. Join me for season 2 of Manufacturing Danger, the Biolab Story. Listen now at gpb.org/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fish go from eggs to larvae to fry to fingerlings to adults. But mix the big fish with the little fish in the same environment, and your little fish will most likely, turn up missing? That's why hatcheries use a process called grading, where fish are sorted by size, species, or quality.
So you mix a catchable trout with a couple of fries or fingerlings, what happens?
Oh, you don't have as many trout as you thought you had. They certainly are likely to eat their brothers and sisters, and so we'll also look at a process today on the hatchery that we're doing called grading them. We're gonna be sorting those fish into three different sizes. All right, so earlier we mentioned more dominant fish growing faster than others. Well, this is how we address that situation with a process called grading. The fish are being pumped off the back half of the raceway, traveling up to the top tower there. From there, fish and water are entering a pipe in the floor of the hopper. That hopper travels down to another basically staging area, or the front end of the grader. So as they get pumped up, there are fish and water ending up in the first hopper, and then as they come down that pipe, we have to get rid of the excess water. The grader has its own water. So we want just fish being delivered to the front end of the grader. From there, those fish are fed into the machine, and the machine operates, so there's two belts. And as the belts go towards the back of the machine, they get further apart. So the smallest fish are right on the belts, and they enter the machine, and there's water spraying down on them, and they fall into the first section, and they end up in the very first 6-inch pipe. The fish that are a little bit larger ride the belts further into the machine with water spraying down on them until they can get to a spot in the belts where they can pass through, and they end up in the middle pipe or into the medium size in that 6-inch pipe. The largest fish in the group travel all the way through the machine on the belts and end up in the back section and end up in the large pipe. All these fish, all these trout were hatched within 3 days, but there are certainly three distinct sizes.
Lots of fish hatching on different days means that Lake Burton Trout Hatchery has to keep a detailed inventory so they know how many fish they have in stock at all times.
That's impressive. And tell me why it's so important that you sort them like this again.
Well, certainly one of the biggest things that we want to do here at the facility is establish an accurate inventory. And in order to do that, we will count 50 fish and weigh them and establish a fish per pound for that group of fish. If the fish are significantly different in size, that process isn't very accurate. But if all the fish are the same size, you get a very accurate fish per pound, then when you weigh all the fish, you know exactly how many you have.
Fantastic.
Well, give or take a few. Not exactly, but pretty doggone close.
It's almost like sorting blueberries. I've seen those blueberry
sorters. Certainly, they have a machine that does it for apples, eggs. We just got one that does it for trout.
Sadly, not all the fish at this hatchery will make it into the open water. I ate three.
Fortunately, when you have 500,000 fish on the hatchery, you're going to lose a few every day. It's part of our routine is to pick up any mortality on the hatchery and enumerate it, keep track of it. We enter it into our spreadsheets, and it takes it off of our inventory.
And so, now that these fish have become adults, it's time to set them free. Once the fish are released, hatcheries make it as easy as possible for anglers to find them.
Our fish, you know, when we stock them, they're usually caught within about 3 to 4 days of being stocked. So you're certainly going to get a fresh trout when you come here.
Where can people find these fish if they're searching through the rivers?
Right. So if you're looking for stocked trout, a good indicator is first to check our weekly stocking report. We put a weekly stocking report out each Friday if the trucks have been out on the road, and that'll tell you where some areas that have been recently stocked. The next piece of the puzzle is to find an area where the truck can get close to the trout stream to throw fish in. We have to, you know, if we stock 1 million fish a year, we can't run them all down through the woods. We've got to be able to get our trucks right next to the water so we can throw those fish in.
And trucks aren't the only way to get them in. I hear every once in a while there's an airborne version.
There is. We have utilized a helicopter to stock trout in remote areas, and that's kind of a special project between Georgia DNR, Trout Unlimited, and the U.S. Forest Service. Well, these are some catchable trout. They're about 0.5 pound apiece. They were destined to go into the helicopter today, but the helicopter stocking today got canceled, so they're going to stay here a few more days at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery. But when it's time, we'll load them on a truck and we'll take them out to a food plot near the Chattooga River, and they'll be stocked.
We've talked about the life cycle, the living conditions, and the sorting of the trout. We've also heard about truckloads and helicopter drops. But how do you collect the fish to load on the truck in the first place?
All right, so when we get ready to load a trout truck here at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery, it takes 3 men to do it. One gentleman gets in the raceway and uses what we call a crowder and pushes all the trout up in that section to a screen where they're very crowded and tight, and we can get in there and dip them up about 50 pounds at a time.
Hatcheries like this one are sustained by federal dollars, and there's lots of ways you, yes you, can help out. One is just by buying a fishing license. And if you're ever driving down a Georgia highway and see someone with a fish on their license plate, that's a person who's pitched in for the cause.
Yeah, one thing that's important to know about this facility and this program is that it's completely supported by federal funds that are associated with the purchase of a Georgia fishing license. So if you'd like to come and support the program, you definitely need to buy a fishing license, but in addition to fishing trout waters in Georgia, you do need a trout stamp. There is one other way to support our program without buying a fishing license, and that's to purchase a trout license plate. That money, 20 of the 25 extra dollars it costs to get that license plate, must be spent on the Georgia Trout Program.
This has been quite an enlightening trip, but don't take my word for it. Why don't you come down to Raven County and visit John at Lake Burton Fish Hatchery and take a tour and see for yourself. Oh, and don't forget your fishing gear.
Lake Burton Fish Hatchery, there's a portion of the hatchery that's open to the public Monday through Friday, 8 to 4:30. And then on weekends, holidays, it's open 10 to 3. And you come in, take a look at some of the trout that we have here, and maybe if you're lucky enough, you'll time it up with a feeding and like these folks.
For more stories like this one, you can watch A Fork in the Road on GPB TV or anytime on the gpb.org website. That's where you'll also be able to listen to and subscribe to this podcast or download it on your favorite podcast platform. I'm David Zelsky. Thanks for listening to A Fork in the Road. Yeah.